Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have back as my guest Dr. Christine Page. Her new book, The Healing Power of the Sacred Woman, Health, Creativity, and Fertility for the Soul. Christine is the author of other books that we've featured on Temple of Health Radio Show. These can be found in the archives at www.plasticos.com under Resources and Radio. And I'm pleased to have her back. Her new book is about the feminine energy that is now, I think, becoming more recognized as the balance of male and female energy is part of the new energy coming to our planet and hopefully transforming some of the problems we have. Welcome, Christine. How are you today?
Wonderful. It's good to be back with you again, Susan. It really is.
Yes. Well, your book, The Healing Power of the Sacred Woman, actually is very appropriate right now. Many spiritual traditions, in order to advance to the next level, you have to balance opposites, which in most of us is male and female energy. So it's very important to do that, in the society. And we come out of a time that you describe very well in your book of having a dominance of overdominance of male energy and suppression of female energy. And I don't know if you've read it or not, but I'm one of the contributors to Goddess Shift, Women Leading for a Change. And that's the theme of that book. Many female leaders all over the world contributed to that book.
It was a wonderful
time
book,
that the goddess
really
energy is coming out.
Yes. I think that I saw that from my own work and reading books such as yours and others, that, you know, as you said, the feminine is getting stronger, and that I really wanted to focus on women. So what I saw was it really is not just the feminine in male and female, that it's also about, do women actually know who they are? So Is there a sense of something that we're missing about what it is to be feminine? And that was why I focused in the book primarily on the body, because I felt that of everything that has changed over the years, the body itself, our female body, has not changed. And so there must be some very clear messages within the feminine form, whether it's the shape of it, or the size of it, or the anatomy, or the physiology, to tell us a little bit more about who we are. And that was really my focus of who are we? Can we rediscover ourselves after what must be about 3,500 years of losing our identity with the patriarchal shift? And that was the focus of the book.
Right, and you go back to the one of the early chapters is meeting our ancestral grandmothers. You want to talk a little bit about what you found when you looked backward into probably societies that predated, the Greek and Roman times.
Oh, way back, as you say, way back. And what I say, that anything less than 3,500 years old is very patriarchally run, so that there has been a tendency for us to look at what did the Greeks think about us, what did the Romans think about us. And, of course, a lot of of Jungian's mythology and our psychology focuses on those ages. But what I realized that they were certainly within 3,500 years, and therefore we're already watching and seeing what it was to be a woman in those days from a patriarchal point of view. So I went much further back, as you say. I went back 30,000 years. In fact, I went back as far as I could in records. And from somewhere around 30,000 years ago, we found, or we know, we have in our possession these images of these wonderful female figures, and we could call them the Great Mother, but let's just call them a female figure that expresses how we believe that feminine was thought of in those days. And she has these huge hips and a very big bust and a very small head, and there's obviously something here to tell us that the female form is meant not to be a size zero and skinny and more male-orientated. It's supposed to love its curves. And whether it was pictures or images, this imagery of the Great Mother or the feminine like this went on way into, we could say, 4,000 BC. So we're talking about a span of 26,000 years, which for many of us is bigger than our minds can get around. We have difficulty thinking about 26 years, let alone 26,000.
Right.
So this was a, this wasn't just a fad, you know, wasn't mm-hmm. something that came and went over 100 years or even 10 years. It was more like, this was a long period of time that this is how the feminine was. And, of course, we don't have that much evidence of how these civilizations lived until we get to about 6,000 years B.C., 8,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then we start to be able to piece together how these societies lived together. And we have images from Turkey, for instance, from Kafelhook, where we know that when that image of the Great Mother was found, there was no evidence of sacrifices or weapons around her, so that 6,000 years ago, 8,000 years ago, excuse me, in that area of the world, especially Mesopotamia, we were in a very different place. And what we then went on to be able to see is people like the Minoans in Crete and other cultures around that time lived together in harmony. And so what I want to express, that we didn't even come, from my mind, my way of looking at it, from a matriarchal society. We came from an equal society. We knew how men and women could live together in equality. And in many of those cultures, the women were seen as the guardians of the rituals, so that women were seen as those who could reach into the realms of spirituality, reach into the other dimensions, and to bring information down, and that women were honored for being able to not only give birth, but also to be able to give death, which, of course, we've lost all of that. But many, many examples that women were associated with both the bringing and the closure of some experience and the birth of a new one. And so it wasn't until around, as I say, this period of, we could say, 3,500 years ago, that we started to see the influx of the patriarchy. And within about 1,000 years, so much of the suppression of the feminine had happened that the temples to the goddesses had changed. And as I say, that is where I feel that we've lost who we were. But it is present in our psyche, and that's what I'm really wanting to help women to return to.
And the early Vestal virgins, who probably weren't virgins, but were involved in sacred sex, they, you know, later became denigrated to whores and prostitutes, according to your research. And
yes, they did. I mean,
we completely lost sacred sexuality.
Yes, the sacred priestesses,
completely.
The understanding of a woman's ability to be able to give birth and to, as you say, to help an individual to have sacred sex, which, of course, isn't always about two people coming together. I mean, sex is about taking your energy to a place of the divine bliss, which is what these women mm-hmm. were trained to do. And if a man was lucky enough to get onto her rising rainbow serpent, then he could be taken to that place. But mm-hmm. that sex wasn't just about between two people. It was literally the raising of the serpent, the dragon energy, so that it became, once this dragon reached the top of our heads, we were taken to that place of divine bliss, of intuitive inspiration. And that was really what that was about. But as you said, I think what happened was that as the patriarchy got stronger, they didn't like the idea that they would need a woman to do that. And mm-hmm. so the feminine, that had the female examples of sacred sexuality, such as those priestesses of Isis and very much Aphrodite-like characters, were seen as whores and harlots. Mm-hmm. But the word harlot actually means sacred woman. It means the beautiful scarlet woman, which was the sacred woman. So even in our words, these have been twisted, that the Germanic name actually comes from the meaning of sacred woman.
And Mary Magdalene, who was most likely Jesus' wife and bore his children, was also made into a prostitute.
Of course, so, that's right. And I think, as I say, any of these stories that we have from, you know, from 3,000 years and less mm-hmm. will have that same patterning. And of course, as you're saying, these are all archetypical energies that women mm-hmm. are now bearing. And I think what is very interesting is that if we look at the divine feminine being the Virgin Mother crone, the aspect mm-hmm. which is most denigrated is the crone-like aspect, which is to do with death, mm-hmm. which is to do with the transformation which occurs both during sexuality and for a woman during her menstrual cycle, through her moon time. So these are times, what we saw was it was that third part of the Trinity that got denied. And so when I was doing my research on the menstrual cycle, I was fascinated that so often when I was reading medical texts, there would be, well, first of all, the egg is created, or the egg is developed, and then it's released, and then it's nurtured. Oh, then there's that bleeding thing, but that doesn't matter. Let's just go back to the important things. Mm-hmm. And it was like, no, the bleed is actually the most important part of all of this. And it was fascinating to see how that had been shifted even within our medical profession.
Yeah. You talk about the dragon energy. Would you like to go further into that idea?
Yes, very much. Thank you. I had been for some years intuitively guided to move my energy down in through my feet into the ground and tap into a chakra that is underneath the feet, which mm-hmm. I call the root chakra or the earth child chakra. It's one of the 12 chakras that we are now all looking at. And what I'd used that in my meditations to say to people I was teaching that it's how important it is to ground ourselves into this energy, which is fluidic. It's not solid. It's fluidic, heated energy, creative energy. And when I was writing the book, I came to the part on sacred sexuality and kept coming up against the piece that talked about Kundalini sleeping in the base chakra. And mm-hmm. it made me just question. I thought, why is Kundalini sleeping? We always talk about Kundalini sleeping. And I thought, well, Kundalini is sleeping because in the 1100s, 1100 AD, the Hindu scriptures disconnected the seven personal chakras, the seven chakras within the body, from the chakras both above and below us. And that, again, was part of the patriarchal tradition, which was to make sure that we never tapped into anything that would allow us to transform ourselves. And that transformation happens by only going into the underworld, into the feet, into the dragon energy. And mm-hmm. I kind of thought, well, no wonder Kundalini is sleeping, because Kundalini is only a vestige of energy, serpent energy. And until Kundalini is reconnected to the dragon queen, or whatever you want to call it, this very creative energy in the earth, she can never, ever be more than she is, which is just, as I say, a small vestige of true energy. And once I started looking at the dragon, I came across so many examples of many cultures knowing about the dragon energy within the earth. And obviously we often say there are dragon lines that go through sacred sites. And yet mm-hmm. what we saw around, again, that 1500 BC, was a slaying of the dragon, a killing of the serpents. And mm-hmm. so many traditions said we can no longer allow this dragon energy, which is so powerful and so connected with the need to destroy and to cause death in order to give birth, that we must get rid of the dragon. And in getting rid of the dragon, we got rid of the very energy that's vital for transformation, which is the ability to let go of something in order to give birth to something new.
Well, we fell asleep, I guess, during the Kali Yuga. Is that correct in Hindu
yes.
terms? And so it's appropriate to think that the Kundalini energy is asleep. Now, what's happening now, though, that we've crossed the medium point, you know, in terms of this, or how is the dragon energy going to play into this reawakening?
Well, we have to return to her. And I think that Pluto going into Capricorn, as it did in 2008, was a start. Pluto very much represents this dragon energy. And I think that the dragon is calling us and mm-hmm. asking us to reconnect to her. And so I'm, obviously 2012 has come and gone, but what we always said was we're going to see a lot of chaos, a lot of death occurring, not necessarily, you know, physical death, but death of old ideas, death of structures.
Mm-hmm.
And this will continue, certainly, until 2023, which is when Pluto goes out of Capricorn. But what I am seeing is that all of us are now having to acknowledge that we cannot keep building something without allowing things to break down and break away. And I think mm-hmm. the Pope's decision to retire because of his illness was an amazing, mm-hmm. amazing agreement that he was mortal. And that may have upset a lot of Catholics, but the fact was that ability to say there has to be an ending and new beginnings is very important, a very important message to us all. It doesn't mean that we're not immortal at some level, but it is through the cycles of moving through the death and the rebirth that bring us to that immortality, not by just denying death altogether. And so I think that the dragon is calling on us to surrender to her those things that need to die. And what I have been suggesting, and I suggest in my book, is that women who are still cycling, who still have menstrual bleeds, use that first day of the menstrual bleed as a time of releasing, whether just emotionally, I mean, in the sense that they could just be in a process of thinking about doing this, or they could do it physically, but releasing into the earth all those things they're finished with for the month. And on the third day of their period, allowing themselves to be more aware and intuitive to new insights coming through. And I would say to any of us who are postmenopausal, we could do the same thing at the time of the new moon, which is called the dark moon. So the day before the so-called new moon in the calendar, it's a great day to take some water, put into that glass of water all those things that you are ready to let go of, you're finished with, and pour it onto the earth. And give it back to the dragon for her to transform those things. And then on again, the third day, be more aware of your intuitive insights that are coming into you. So I feel it's women have a way of reconnecting and helping both men and women to allow this process of the dragon to return. And that's the way I would see the dragon is calling upon us.
I think also adding to the comment about the Pope, I think that in the near future we may see the Queen of England stepping down as well, and that'll mark the end of something. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to mention is that in your book you talk about the postmenopausal woman being able to connect much more, I guess, completely with other dimensions and other forms of knowing. And I've experienced that especially since the end of December.
Right.
Not just in the dream state either, but in the waking state, being
right.
aware of multiple dimensions and what's going on and having a great, a real difference in what is, you know, what is in my perceptual reality,
right,
which
right.
I think other clairvoyants have also mentioned. There is something definitely different happening.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, you know, 2012 represented the falling of the veils between the dimensions.
Right.
And there's no
exactly.
doubt that I think people of all ages and both genders are experiencing tremendous insights and sensitivity in ways that they would never have done before the end of December.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very exciting place we're in, but it's a place also that we can't hide anymore. So those things that we need to come to terms with, to accept, are also mm-hmm. coming up for us to look at them in intense ways that hadn't been before the end of December.
Yeah, I think that the energies coming in are, which you actually talked about in an interview that we did, 2012 in the Galactic Center, these energies coming in are actually entering through the chakra systems and then having effects, you know, mental, emotional, and even physical that in the energy field of each and every one of us. I don't think, you know, you really have to think about it as that type of system to understand how this energy is going to shift things, like, you know, the power structures, the, you know, the all of the things that were hidden for so long that people didn't even know about. I know right now a lot of people are really unhappy with what they're finding out about that was hidden, and they're really unhappy about it, but, you know, it's like, well, that's a step you've got to go to. You know, a few months ago you didn't even know about it, and now you're unhappy about it, but at least you know about it. It's a step in the right direction. But I truly see people waking up all over the place, waking
Absolutely.
Up to what really was there, but they didn't know it.
You know, it's a question of what we actually think that we want from the world. I mean, you know, if you're on a spiritual path, there has to be a question of what is your requirement. You know, what do you want from life? And for many people, they'd say, I want to fulfill my destiny, and why do you want to know what I'm here for? And what we're here for is to know ourselves. It's as simple as that. It isn't something about, well, we're going to, you know, it's all about service to the world or want to change the world pattern. That's the outer expression of what we're here for. The inner expression is, as you say, to know myself. And at this moment in our history, humanity is being given a chance to know themselves. And that means not just, oh, yes, I know who I am. No, accepting every part of who we are. That's the biggest challenge. I know it from my teaching that people want to know themselves, but they only want to know the nice things about them.
Right.
Or they don't want to accept something that they perhaps can't do anything about. The fact is, all we're meant to do is have experiences so that we know ourselves. We meet people who we get upset with so that we might know ourselves. It's simple. And sometimes we need a sledgehammer because we don't want to accept something. So that can also happen in our lives, that we kind of avoid something over and over again until we can't avoid it. We've been running away from that demon in our dream state until that now we have to face it. And it isn't face it in a negative way, but face it so we can accept it with love. That's all we're meant to be doing.
Yeah, there's a story about someone who keeps having nightmares about three horrible, mean dogs chasing him. And, you know, every night he wakes up in a cold sweat because, you know, he's so scared of these dogs. And one night in a dream, he turns around and faces the dogs, and they transform into three masters who said, gee, it's about time you figured out you needed to face us.
So isn't that the truth?
That sums up that story, you know, and whether it's in the dream state or in the real state, whatever you're afraid of will be on your heels until you learn
absolutely.
To deal with it.
You know, and so much of the time we're talking in that language, I just don't feel safe around the world. And the real question is, it's not out there, it's what don't we feel we want to allow into our hearts? What don't we feel safe with? And certainly is this time now that people are being given opportunities to turn and face the dogs that are chasing them.
Right, exactly. So, you've talked a lot about... One of the interesting things I found in the book is talking about some of the more spiritual aspects behind diseases that might affect, you know, the ovaries, the breasts, the uterus. Why do you think we have such a increase in ovarian and uterine and breast problems? It seems like, you know, we haven't done much on the war on cancer.
You're very much involved with that, you know, at the moment. And I feel that, again, it's a sense of when we don't own something, it comes at us in multiple ways. And I think the female, the woman, is being asked to really turn and face herself. And I think these illnesses are becoming much more prevalent. Also, I think we're at a critical point where so many women have become empowered, but by becoming a mini man, you know, by enhancing their masculine. And I think we are seeing that in so many areas of society, and I'm delighted that women have found their power, but I, as an intuitive and someone works with people, I see they've often done that at a great cost to their feminine. And many carry, you know, feelings about their feminine that are not respectful and not loving. They maybe have images of their mother or their grandmother, and they say, well, I don't want to be like her. And they've turned their backs on their feminine as they turn their backs on maybe their energies around their mother or their grandmother. And to me, this is a time for us to really stop and realize that our mother, our grandmother, our ancestral women are actually a part of us, and that rather than running away from them, we need to stop and face and find out where they're wounded, because all of us, men and women, are carrying the wounds of our ancestors. And until we honor those wounds, we can't move forward.
Yeah,
so maybe it's just
true.
Another time for, as we're talking about, for things that have been buried for a long time to come to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And to recognize, where are we building a life based on wounds rather than actually on the deeper aspects of our soul?
You told a story in the book that was interesting. An older woman with breast cancer, and you were talking with her, and she knew the exact minute she developed the cancer because her daughter verbally attacked her.
That's right.
I think that that's important to understand. I had developed one fibroid, but I knew the exact second that fibroid began.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew exactly what wounding that was. So those of us who are more intuitive might be more sensitive to, you know, an attack on our energy system just because we're more aware of it. But it is so true that a biological conflict, especially in women who are betrayed, you know, a husband cheats on them, an uncle sexually abuses them. The betrayal or the attack of a loved one can very much be the actual incident that incites breast cancer.
Yes, it can be. I think that where you speak about I write about the message of disease and the mind-body connection, which I think is still lost in many people's minds, that maybe they like the idea for somebody else that there's a mind-body connection, but when it comes to ourselves, they say, no, it can't have been anything to do with anything I did. And I find that particularly amongst the medical profession. But, you know, I again have spent many, many years asking people what was going on in your life when you got sick. And
right,
these are not people who are particularly intuitive. They immediately tell me, I know why I have. I have breast cancer.
But maybe that
disease.
Is a form of their intuition, you know.
It is.
They're
and
aware
they're
of their own energy system.
You know, you mentioned, well, people who are particularly sensitive. You know, I can say this to people who have never, ever been to a spiritual meeting or ever thought about
right.
it, and they're there.
Right.
And I think, what a waste of time that we're not actually asking people these questions. Because
We should be, because a lot of people know why they're sick. And that's not just with cancer. That's with heart disease. And
exactly.
That's with uncontrolled anger is a big, big cause of heart disease. I mean,
exactly.
It really is.
I took
care of lots of people in the hospital with, you know, life-threatening heart disease. And, it really is there, is what you mentioned in the book about breast cancer and other ovarian cancers. It's really, you know, a theme. The nice person who doesn't take care of their own needs can develop breast cancer. You know, that's
absolutely
very true.
Absolutely. And, you know, when we talk about, maybe, you know, the abuse, and of course there's abuse that happens when we're young, and that's extremely difficult to even start to comprehend how that is continuing in our societies. But as we get older and we are now in a situation where perhaps we have at some level got a choice to whether or not we accept this abuse. And we all know, I mean, I've done it myself, is continued in a destructive relationship that I knew was not respectful. And what I would like to see is us helping women and men, but mainly women, to see that they do have choice. And the first choice is, do they feel that what is happening to them is respectful? And, of course, in a sexual abuse situation, you're way beyond that. But I hear people being emotionally abused and allowing that to continue. Maybe one, they're one of these nice people who just lets things carry on. Mm-hmm. And what we need to be teaching our young women and our young men is that if it doesn't feel right, if it doesn't feel respectful, they have the right to say no. But we've got, you know, we as my generation, it sounds like your generation, we need to wake up and stop allowing it to happen to us. You know, the victim is no longer acceptable. So it is about, it's not about teaching self-defense. It's about teaching self-love that says,
well,
it doesn't feel right to me.
Self-love is the most important thing. If you love yourself, then you don't allow others to hurt you.
That's right.
And you also realize that you can't make anybody love you. I mean, give it up.
No, you can't.
You know, that's just not going to happen.
No, and you can't also make anybody happy, and you can't make someone unhappy. And, you know,
that's
these
right. That's right.
Concepts. And
it's not your job to make them happy either. You know?
No, but when we, you know, so what, of course, when we talked about, when I talk about breast cancer, I mean, I meet a lot of women. First of all, I want to tell everybody that I actually had breast cancer just shortly after finishing writing this book. And this really was a wonderful wake-up call for me to say I needed to go deeper into the writing of the book and to really mm-hmm. do my own work. So when I got the breast cancer and developed it, and I want to say I developed it, it wasn't put upon me, I
You're
was allowed and gave myself permission to go inside and say, wow, yeah. We talk about self-love, but I don't even know the self that needs the loving. Mm-hmm. And I realized how easy it was. Yes, I can go for massages and lie in baths and do all the let people help me, but who is doing that? Who is allowing that? Who is having that massage? And I realized how far I'd got away from my true self. Mm-hmm. I had become the Christine who wanted to please people, not the Christine who said, is this really what I want in this moment? And since the breast cancer, I have been given myself so much more permission to, instead of going along with someone because it would be best for them or thinking I'd make them happy, really being able to mm-hmm. stop and just say, hang on, what, Christine, beyond your so-called spirituality, your fact that you're a teacher, a healer, whatever, do you want this? And when I ask myself those questions, there are many more no's in my vocabulary than there were before.
Yeah, and it's so true. And the idea of know yourself, what I believe that's about is knowing that person, or it's not really even a person, it's an energy that goes lifetime to lifetime to lifetime, that never will die, that has a lot of wisdom, has a lot, that knows that maybe you're not supposed to go out that evening, not because of anything that is in your perceptual reality, but because if you go out that evening, the restaurant you're going to is going to be bombed. You see what
yeah.
I mean?
It's yeah,
like
exactly.
It has nothing to do with you. It is protective for you. And
that's the
know yourself we're supposed to do, because we're supposed to live in constant communication with that self, because that's where your spiritual protection lies. That communication with that self will let us know whether or not it's good to be in relationship or if it's dangerous to be in relationship, because a lot of times the personality self doesn't know that the person that wants to take you out is not safe. You know, perhaps has some
true.
Disease or has some intention, you know, that's hidden. So you've got to be in constant communication with your more, what they call it, your higher self, but that's where all of your protection lies.
That's certainly true. I agree with you, and I would say I'm fairly connected to that self in my life. And what I wasn't connected to, perhaps, was this dragon energy that I'm talking about. That mm-hmm. the dragon energy sits in my sacral chakra, in my uterus, and mm-hmm. whereas my higher self might tell me something or my heart might tell me something, she has very raw emotions. And when I first met her in a visual imagery, she was like a little girl with what I would call, we call them pigtails in England, and a hockey stick, and she was kind of ready for a fight. And mm-hmm. I saw how, as a nice person, having been brought up in that way, I didn't always listen to her because I saw that I felt, I believed that her actions were inappropriate and I wanted mm-hmm. to be liked. But when I got the cancer, I started listening to her more. And when I would say, you know, should I go along with this person's ideas, she'd say no. I mean, it was very, very direct.
Yeah, right.
You know, and it was yeah. purely about Christine the woman. You know, it wasn't about mm-hmm. my spirituality, whether this would be good for me. This was about, no, I don't like this person, you know, just like a
right.
child would be. And I realized my child had always been responsible from the moment I was born. That mm-hmm. that sense of just being childlike and stamping my feet was essential for me to, as you said, release some of that anger, but much more be assertive mm-hmm. in my own power and
right.
and not get
right.
into my head of how will my decision affect someone else, which is what I'd always done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I think it's a balancing of energy, you know,
the nice Christine
versus the Christine that has, you know, boundaries, and that is important.
And I think, obviously, everybody's different, but I do know that there are other people like me probably listening who are pleasers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we have a tendency to read other people's energies and work out what they want rather than mm-hmm. listening to our own.
Oh, yeah, that's true. It's about balance. They did a study back before the protease inhibitors came out for HIV, and they found long-term survivors with AIDS, they had this like 42 questionnaire thing that they filled out, but there was only one question that separated those that survived from those that didn't survive. Very interesting question. I think you'll appreciate it. The question was, would you offer help to someone who didn't ask for it? And everybody who survived said no.
Right.
And that's very, very pertinent to what you just said about what you found out with your breast cancer.
It is, because thank you for that, because that, you know, obviously AIDS is connected to the heart chakra, breast cancer is, many mm-hmm. of course most cancers are, and what I write about and I know for myself, it's like, what, where is the I? It does the me exist external to mm-hmm. my how I'll affect the rest of the world? And what I realized when I got breast cancer, I had lost the I. I'd got mm-hmm. so concerned with the outer world from a, you know, here I am in service to humanity, here I am service to the mm-hmm. universe, you know. Mm-hmm. I'd gone too far away from the center of me that says, Chris, you know, does it matter to you? Does your life matter enough to you? And I had to come back to that
mm-hmm.
and say, well, actually, if my life does matter to me, then I have to make better decisions about my internal or my relationships and my friendships, and that's what I've done.
Well, we often
would I take
have
care
the
of
path.
Else? No,
right. We have the path of the wounded healer. You know, I was spiritually guided in meditation to get Dow Corning silicone gel breast implants, and then 8 years later, one of them leaked, just one side. So all the symptoms were on one side. And that led me to go through a whole thing of healing myself, learning about functional medicine, and then writing a book called The Naked Truth About Breast Implants and taking care of thousands of women who are ill from their implants, either from biotoxicity, from mold, or chemical toxicity, and being really the only person in the world to understand this. And I never thought there would be, that I would be the only person to figure something out. You know, it just never occurred to me that could ever happen.
Right.
And so far, no other plastic surgeon has, you know, it's a complicated illness, so you have to understand functional medicine, and I guess no other plastic surgeon has gotten educated in that. But I do imagine that other plastic surgeons will become ill from their breast implants, so I guess eventually, hopefully, it will occur, because I am going to retire in a few years, and that, you know, it would be sad if I'm the only person that really understood this, and then I'm no longer available to do surgery on people.
Well, but, I mean, this is a huge message, though, isn't it? Beyond even the
it is
the fact of removing or choosing what you're going to use, the very reason of why we have plastic surgery, why we have implants.
The women are deathly ill. The women are deathly ill. And so you have to know all sorts of stuff. They can bleed in surgery. You need to know to give them desmopressin if that happens. They can, you know, get risk of pulmonary embolus. They can go into severe adrenal insufficiency. So you have to know all these things before you operate on them, because you have to do things to prevent them, you know, from happening or at least lessen them. So, but you know, it's just odd that we haven't really learned from mistakes. You know, they reintroduced the implants in 2006. And really didn't change very much. I mentored at a study where they compared their leakage to Allergan, which were the two main implants at the time in the country, and said that their implants leaked less platinum than Allergan. And my response to that is, I thought they took platinum out of the implant and replaced it with tin. You know, I didn't realize they still had platinum in implants.
Wow.
So, you know, yeah. So it's not, we really haven't learned much about that other than to passed that law at the Supreme Court level saying that if it's FDA approved, you can't have a class action lawsuit. Remember that the Dow Corning lawsuit was the largest class action in history.
Wow.
So they sort of nixed that idea, you know. Mm. Well, you can't do that again, so I guess I'll be in business for a long time.
but it's also taking it one step further back, isn't it, Susan? I mean, why are women having implants? Why are women choosing to go along a path? It doesn't make it right or wrong, but being the amount of media persuasion to look a certain way, mm-hmm. be a certain way, is immense. It's in the songs the young people are listening to. It's in the movies. It's in the television. And we are bombarded with these messages of how we should be that may not be appropriate for ourselves. But it's very hard not to go along with something as a young person to fit in. We've all done it.
Sure. Well, that's
so you
true.
Must be seeing, I mean, many more young women are wanting to have implants for
their
body.
Well, you know, they're advertised now as being safe, where they're not.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Certain HLA types, certain genetic types, the minute you put silicone in them, they become deathly ill. I had a doctor from Germany, triathlon runner, that had HLA B27, and she got implants and within 4 months had 7 different autoimmune disease diagnoses. Mm-hmm. Of course, she was pretty smart, too, so she got on the Internet. And well, they told her just to, you know, she would just be in the bed. I mean, she couldn't even get out of the bed. She got on the computer, found me, came, had surgery, had the detox, had the immune system and endocrine system straightened out, and is now doing fine.
Oh, wonderful.
But if women don't have the Internet access and the intuition to find us, they're not going to know what's wrong with them, because their doctors are all singing the same song, it's not your implants.
Right.
Well, it is their implants, you know.
Yeah. That's the influence of the drug companies. It's the young influence of the money that's coming in for these things. That's all I'm saying, is so much influence. My concern is how many young women are now choosing not to have menstrual cycles, that they're choosing to have a patch or an injection or something that says, well, only have one or two periods a year. And
well, that's
that
a particularly bad idea.
You know, with my research, I'm really saying is actually women cycling is the one thing that keeps our world productive. And that if women stop cycling, I see a real problem to the world itself. And I'm being, you know, very serious about this. This isn't just something, a thought. This is about women cycling is actually the way in which things move like the planet does. We go through winter, spring, and summer, and autumn. When women stop cycling, then we have real problems as a species.
Well, and the things that they're using to stop the cycling are associated with complications. You know that.
Yes, well, of course they are. I mean, they have been from the day that we could say the pill was discovered.
That's right.
I mean,
any
time that any of us would put on a hormone, any time we take a hormone, we are putting ourselves at risk. And again, that's not always explained. It said, oh, no, there are minor risk factors here. Nothing's got a minor. If you're in influencing the normal cycles or the normal endocrine system, of course you're going to get backlash.
Yeah.
But that's where we're at. And when I saw that in the United States, we take 50% of all prescribed drugs in the world, you know, it said to me, wow, what a drug-driven society we live in, and we think we're healthy. And we have really one of the poorest health services because we are reliant on our drugs, which is not good. And the health to me was taking somebody off their drugs, not keeping them on a drug.
Yeah, we used to do that in the military. They'd come in and be on like 12 medications and have some really horrible thing happening to them. And the first thing we were taught to do was take them off everything.
Yes.
It seemed to work.
But, people are taking drug after drug. I was put for a short time on one of the drugs to reduce and stop my estrogen in my body after the breast cancer. And I was told that there was a very high percentage of people who suffered from joint problems with this drug. And
right.
I went on it in about 6 weeks or 4 weeks into taking the drug. I got these extreme joint pains, and I couldn't get out of bed almost with my back pain, and I've never had backache. And I went on the internet again, and I looked up, and all I read was the clinician saying, well, this is going to happen, and you can just start taking anti-inflammatories. And you can do that for 5 years.
Right.
And I thought, why would I take a drug to stop the side effects of another drug? And fortunately, I have a wonderful oncologist and surgeon, and, we made the decision that I should come off it. But it just feels that we have got into such a spiraling down effect of giving away our power to drug companies who are telling us that if we don't do this, we'll die. And one of the messages I want to put over to women is actually women actually basically do not have a fear of death, because every month as we have our moon cycles, we bleed, we actually go into the valley of death and then we come out again. So death is something that women actually do know how to go through, with the understanding that there's a birth. But again, when we haven't been taught this, we are then given this life sentence, say, you're going to die if you don't do this, and we go along with it. Well, both of us, we're going to die. Everybody's going to die. That is one certainty.
That's right.
And it shouldn't be the threat that puts people into a powerless and victim state. It should be okay, how do I improve the quality of your life, not make you worse in the fear that something's going to, that is inevitable, is going to happen anyway. So
I think
there's a lot of changes, and I think women have more of an intuitive grasp on these things, and that's what I'm encouraging.
Yeah, and I've come to realize, too, after being a doctor for over 30 years, that if somebody really needs a medication, if they have an infection, if they have, for example, a fungal infection, we see a lot of that with breast implants, if they really need the medication, then side effects don't occur.
Right.
It's when you give somebody a drug that they don't need that they get the side effect. Isn't that
You're
the
absolutely
truth?
Right. Absolutely. I used to say that about antidepressants. I didn't give out that many. And people would say, well, will I go on for the rest of my life? And I would say, no, when you don't need them, your body will tell you.
Exactly.
And I always found that.
Exactly. Yeah.
The person would say,
I didn't take it.
I forgot to take it. And you could see they were weaning themselves off.
Right.
Because they were better.
And one of the things is forgetting to take the medication.
Yes.
That's a sign that you don't need it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very, obviously, again, having gone through the experience myself, how challenging it is to take control of your life when you have cancer. Because there is a huge fear element. And also, people are giving advice, first of all, that is usually not asked for, and secondly, always with this idea that if you don't do this, you're going to die. And I realized, that, first of all, I always think it's strange that people should say, you're going to die. That's the first thing a cancer patient thinks of, We know that.
Yeah.
And then the
second
thing is
that
I found that so many of my colleagues who were called themselves holistic would actually not listen to my spiritual needs, would only just tell me that I needed this vitamin or do this or exercise more. And I'd think, hang on, you don't even know what my diet is now. How are you telling me these different things? Why don't you listen to my story? Why don't you ask me about something rather than just tell me what you think I should be doing? And I saw just how often we never listen to people. We jump in with an idea and fail to really appreciate that what I've found, I'm sure you have, that many a time somebody actually needs their illness in order to give them a break from life. And that
yeah.
we stopped.
Oh, that's true.
They need time out.
That's
or they
time
need
out.
To have
that's
the illness
right.
so that they can say no to somebody, or maybe they have the illness so
yeah.
that people can... They can ask people to help them, whatever. It's not the illness
yeah.
that's always the issue. It's often the solution.
Yeah, and so many of the patients that come here for cancer are reconnecting with their intuitive spiritual nature because they know through that reconnection what they need to do to get healthy again, just
that's
like
right.
you did.
Yes,
I mean,
exactly.
you increase your ability to connect, and then the answers come forth. Well, this was due to this. Okay, well, release
yeah.
that, and then boom, you're good with it. A patient who was here a couple of weeks ago said, I know exactly why I had this breast cancer. It's because I
yeah.
grieved way too much when my last dog died. She said, I've lost lots of dogs, no problem, but this one dog, that really did it. And
yeah.
so then she, when she realized that in the healing room, she went out, she called a pet whisperer that could communicate with the dog. She straightened it out with the dog. She came back. She says, okay, let's do the surgery. Get this cancer out of here. It'll be gone.
There we go.
That was great. She
there
knew exactly what
Isn't
it was.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah,
that wonderful?
Yeah. And I didn't, I mean, I don't know if she has dogs. I don't know anything. I mean, I could tell her to change her diet, but, it's not the diet. It's the response to the dog's death,
Exactly. It really is.
Right.
What I saw was, I've always felt that seeing that illness is a message from the soul. But what
it
I
is.
Saw was that illness is an opening of a window for us,
mm-hmm.
or a doorway for us to pass through
yeah.
to gain
right.
greater consciousness, greater knowing of ourselves.
It is.
And what
it
I was very clear
I
about
it's a final exam.
But that the door will, that you may well still get better even if you don't go through the door, but you miss the opportunity.
Right.
And I think that's
right.
the key to it, is we are given these opportunities, these crises in our life, to go through a door. And nobody's going to blame you if you choose not to. And you may well, get better and everything will be lovely. But those leaps of consciousness may not occur if we don't take advantage of them.
That's true. That's very true. Well, we're at the end of our hour, Christine. It's been a lovely interview.
Oh, it's been a pleasure speaking
is there any,
with you.
Is there any contact information you'd like to give?
Anybody who would like to know more about my work, to go to christinepage.com. Nice and easy. And the Christine is with a C-H.
And Christine has other books, Frontiers of Health, 2012 Neglectic Center. And she also is a seminar leader and probably has her schedule up on her website. Is that right?
I do, and I offer intuitive readings. I'm not a
okay.
medical intuitive. I'm a soul reader, so I'm more interested in
uh-huh.
why someone is getting sick rather than just being able to diagnose it. So
right.
I'm always
right.
happy to. My calendar and my registration is on my website.
Great. Well, we've been interviewing Dr. Christine Page, author of The Healing Power of the Sacred Woman. And it's been a great interview. Thanks so much for joining us, Christine.
Oh, thank you for having me on again. It's always a pleasure, and best wishes with all your wonderful work.
Thank you very much. Next week, we will have Dr. Eric Love back, healing the emotional component. Dr. Love works with Bach Flower Remedies. And then Wynn Free will be on the 13th, talking about the raw material. And then on the 20th, Dr. Joseph Mercola, Strategies for Eating Healthy and Weight Control. This month's Noetic Science Meeting is Preparation for the Future Coming Events by Paul Esch. And we have the Abraham Hicks Meetup Group, Law of Attraction, every Wednesday evening at 7:30 at the Dunwoody Center. Again, thank you so much for joining us, and join us next week.